everybody. Happy October.
Hello. It's creepy month.
And it's spooky season.
What is this? Episode 31.
Yes. Oh. That's funny. Right? That is a little ironic. Ha ha. It's spooky season. We're so excited. We love Halloween. We love fall. Guys, reach out to us. Tell us some spooky stuff you want to hear because we want to do some great stuff for the season. So please reach out to us. You had an update?
I do. So remember when I did Nexium?
Yes.
Claire Bronfman, the Seagram's heiress.
Okay.
She just got sentenced to 6 years and 9 months in prison after pleading guilty in April of last year to harboring migrants for labor services and for credit card fraud.
Oh. Well, good. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Because you're loony.
Yeah, all of them are just evil and...
Yeah. It's not cool. Yeah. Not cool, man. Not cool. Not cool to be evil.
Yeah. That's why you go to jail.
Y'all. Other than that, I hope everybody's doing all right. Yeah.
We are going to get Patreon back together. I'm sorry it's taken so long for those of you that are on Patreon.
Yes, Toby and Sophie, we love you. We're sorry. We have more videos for you. We really do. And for anybody else that wants to join and go watch those videos, please, please do.
Yep.
Please. Okay, thanks.
And I'm probably going to do like a mini episode for Halloween too.
Yeah, so. We plan on doing a lot of stuff, you guys, and we want you guys to see this content. We want you guys to get to know us more. So please go do that. So this week I'm doing the Yuma Territorial Prison. I don't know, just stumbled upon it. Sounded cool. Went for it. So it sits on a bluff overlooking the Colorado River, 3 miles west of the confluence of the Colorado and the historic Gila River stands the ruins of Arizona's famous territorial prison. So Yuma itself has been...
Yuma.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yuma itself has been a roadway for lots of people, for many, many years. People went through... You said Yuma?
Yep.
Okay. I'm probably going to say that wrong again. People went through Yuma traveling to California, to the California gold fields in 1849. A military post was built there in 1850. In 1858, they had a boom from the gold rush of the Colorado River. And then in 1871, Yuma became the county seat of Yuma County itself. In 1875, why can't I say this fucking word?
Legislature?
Thank you. I know the word. I just want it to come out. They approved the prison and set a $25,000 budget for it. So ground broke on April 28th of 1876, and some prisoners were actually sent to work to build their own cells.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So then the first 7 inmates moved in July 1st of 1876 into, you know, the cells they built. The prison had all different types of inmates. You know, there was people there for murder, petty theft,
all kinds of things. Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it operated for 33 years when it closed due to overcrowding. Surprise, surprise. I feel like that happens
a lot.
Often. 3,069 prisoners, including 25 women, were housed there. Accommodations were very tight, like 6 men to a cell tight.
Oh, good God.
Yeah. They only showered once a week, and their waste buckets in each room were only emptied once a day.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. But it did have electricity and the best library in town.
How nice for them.
So, you know, we're going to use probably a big portion of this prison for a library and then just shove all the inmates in one room.
Good deal.
Makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Where was I? So from the date of the closure, the prison has been used for various groups for various reasons. From 1910 to 1914, it was used for the students, for the students after the Yuma High School burned down, resulting in the school's mascot becoming the criminals.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, sports teams were the criminals. Like, okay. The hospital in Yuma used the facility from 1914 to 1923. In 1924, the Southern Pacific Railroad demolished the western one-third of the prison to make way for the new tracks. And then the VFW leased the guards' quarters in 1931 and used it for their clubhouse until 1960. And then hobos riding the trains in 1920s and 1930s slept in the cells, as well as families during the Great Depression.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah, there's just been a lot of traffic through this area, through this prison, just a lot of things. Since 1930s, requests to preserve the prison have been made, and in 1939, local residents began to raise the funds for renovation of the guard tower and construction of a museum to be located on the site of the mess hall. The city of Yuma operated the museum and prison area until 1960. The Yuma Territorial Prison State Historic Park opened to the public on a limited basis January 1st, 1961. Today you can still do tours and all the things.
Okay.
So, for the ghosties, it said that as soon as you enter, you just get a really unsettling feeling.
I imagine.
Yeah, very heavy, which, I mean, it sounds like wasn't the greatest of living conditions, so I'm sure people weren't happy when they were here.
No, and, I mean, even then, it looks like people were going there as, like, a last resort afterwards.
Yeah, or, like, squandering or whatever. So it's very quiet, but you can often hear a soft strum of a guitar. There used to be a prison band back in the day.
How do you get that unfortunate job?
I have no idea, but they come up later, and it's so great. Oh my god, it's so great. Okay, moving on. There's a little girl who sneaks up and pokes and pinches visitors, apparently knowingly alarming everybody she touches with her icy cold fingers.
Children ghosts are scary.
Yeah, and this one gets creepier also. She's known to be found in the dark cell, which I'll talk about later.
Ew.
Yeah, this... It's... Okay. Spoiler alert, I did watch a Ghost Adventures episode on this, and I really don't blame Zach for being as scared as he was. Because this place was fucking creepy. State historian Marshall Trimble says that she is attracted to kids and people in red. She probably died with one of the families that were there for the Great Depression.
Right.
There is another theory later on about her dying in a different way, but I can't remember what it was. He also said, or scratch that. So this historian also said that, quote, the offices and museum have also seen their share of strange happenings. Things are often moved about, lights turn on and off, and on one occasion, coins from the cash register in the gift shop literally flew into the air and landed back in the drawer, end quote.
Wow.
Yeah, which I don't like that.
No.
The coin thing, I don't know why it creeps me out when ghosts play with coins. I just don't like it when they move shit in general, I guess.
Yeah.
There was a man named John Ryan who was imprisoned around 1900 for crimes against nature. He ended up committing...
What does that mean, I wonder?
Dude, at this point, who the fuck knows?
Crimes against nature.
Like, that could... Back in the 1900s, I'm sure that could have meant... A lot of many different things. Yeah. Like, things that are probably normal today, honestly, could have been considered crimes against nature.
That's... I want to look into it just because...
Right? Like, why? Anyways, he ended up committing suicide in cell 14, and to this day, tour guides get a cold chill when walking past that cell. I don't know if I put this in here later, so I'm going to say it before I forget. In the Ghost Adventures episode, it did talk about, so he was in jail, and then, like, a year after, he was sent into the dark cell, which is what they used as, like, their solitary, and it was a couple of days later after he was taken out of that he committed suicide.
Oh.
And more things of that nature also happened.
Oh.
Ill-behaved inmates spent time in the dark cell, chained to ring bolts in severe isolation. This is the shadowy center of the prison and where visitors feel the most uneasy. It's a damp, claustrophobic hole measuring only 10 by 10, and it's 5 feet tall.
Oh.
That just makes me think of a fucking chokey.
Yes.
And, I mean, so these are grown-ass men. You can't stand up straight. Like, it's only 5 feet tall. Like, there's no way. Most men are way taller than that.
Oh, that's awful.
So two of the inmates who spent time in the dark cell were immediately transferred to an insane asylum upon release. There was a reporter who, she was, like, a local reporter, and she was like, well, I'll take the challenge. Like, I can stay there. That's not creepy. So she wanted to stay in the cell for 48 hours, shackled to the ring bolt with a jug of water and a loaf of bread. After 37 hours, she was screaming for help and demanded to be released, saying that she was not in the cell alone.
Well, made a believer of her, huh?
Yeah, you did that to yourself, buddy. There is also a prison cemetery on the grounds.
Ugh,
112 inmates were buried after dying while serving time.
Ugh.
I feel like that's a lot. 22 of them specifically meeting a violent death and clearly have refused to rest until justice has been served.
Aww.
So now we're going to get into our Zachopedia.
Good old Zach Bagans.
So when they first went in there, they went into the dark cell, and, like, the guide dude that they were with said, so there was literally, it was literally a cave underground, like, in, like, a granite pocket, pretty much. And so there was, like, this little vent hole in the ceiling, and that was your only source of light. And if the guards didn't like you, they would drop, like, scorpions and snakes through that hole down onto the inmates.
Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, we're in Arizona, and I think it said that, like, the temperatures would get up to, like, 115, like...
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, I know underground, I'm sure you were probably much cooler than you could have been, but I'm still just absolutely horrible. So this part was really funny. So at one point, Zach was, like, crouched down, like, looking at the ground, being Zach, and dude was talking, and all of a sudden, like, all of these bats, like, came out of nowhere, like, behind Zach and scared the living shit out of him. And the dude goes, just hold out your hand and they'll land on it. And Zach replies, literally, quote, sir, what is wrong with you? I about died because he was like, no, I need to get the fuck away from this guy.
That's,
he's crazy.
So funny.
Like, it was just perfect timing. And it's, I mean, his face, it killed me. The entrance of the prison, was where this, I think it was called, like, the gate riot or something like that happened. So what happened was there was 7 inmates that, kidnapped Thomas Gates, who was the superintendent, and they held him hostage with a knife, and they drug him to the entrance of the prison, and Thomas ended up signaling to the guards at the guard tower, who shot and killed 4 of the prisoners, and he ended up surviving, but he was, like, so traumatized by this that he committed suicide a few weeks or months later or something like that.
Oh, jeez.
Which, that's fucking terrifying, I can only imagine.
Right?
One resident of Yuma went and felt, so she was on the episode with Zach, and she was a resident there, and she said that she went there for a tour, and she went to cell 14 where John had committed suicide, and she felt so sad that she just left. But, like, after she left, she just could not stop thinking about it. So she went back that night, and she was outside of the prison, and she, like, put her hands on the wall where the cell was, And she was like, I can see that you're sad. Like, if you want to talk to somebody, I'm here to listen. And all of a sudden, one of her hands was, like, pushed completely off the wall. And she said that she completely lost her breath and started crying. And so she just ran to her car and left.
Ugh.
Yeah. So, of course, Zach was like, hey, we're going to go back after this poor woman has been, like, fucking traumatized.
Right.
And so they started talking to John Ryan. And here's some weird voices that they couldn't make out. So Billy then goes in and enhances the EVP. And at first it kind of sounds like this jail is proof that I'm something. But then the more they listen to it and they realize that she had just asked, how did you commit suicide? And then they were like, oh, he's saying the jail post up. Like the jail post that was above me.
Oh.
So he told her how he committed suicide because he did hang himself. Which I was like, I don't like that. So there's also a picture, like a famous picture of a man captured in a doorway, which people believe to be John Ryan. In the cemetery, when they went, they were trying to contact John. So what's really sad is like none of the graves are even marked. And so they think that people see a lot of apparitions there because maybe the ghosts are standing over their graves, like, just trying to say, like, hey, this one's mine.
Aw, that's
yeah. Sad. So, they hear a lot of footsteps. They get, like, a big emotional wave that comes over them and then quickly leaves. It was just really weird. And then, so once the lockdown starts, they were just, like, walking through, like, the main cell hall where literally nothing is happening. And then, all of a sudden, Aaron goes to, like, talk to Zach, and you just hear this, like, it sounds like Gemma when she's, like, just a blood-curdling scream. It was a little girl just blood-curdling scream out of complete nowhere. And it was loud. And so they were like, okay, what the fuck? And it sounded like it was coming from the dark cell where that little girl is said to be. And so now they're in the dark cell. And Zach said that he felt something grab his hand. They heard footsteps that sounded like they were literally, like, right in front of them. They heard, it sounded like somebody was knocking on, like, an iron door. This was really funny, too. There was, because Zach was talking about, oh my gosh, like, did you hear that knocking? It sounded like boom, boom, boom. And there was an EVP that, it was literally mocking Zach, because it sounded like it was saying, boom, boom, boom. But they were like, well, it sounds like he's like laughing or something. But to me, it sounded like he was just straight mocking Zach. Like, it was funny. So Billy was trying to talk to another inmate named William, but he was using like that thing that like types out the message.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it's called. But he was using that and he kept saying like, William, is this you? Is this you? Blah, blah, blah. And then he gets a message saying Peter. Like,
well, that's not William.
Nope, not William, but he got something. So Aaron starts walking the grounds by himself and sees a shadow figure caught on camera that was also caught on camera. And then he felt something touch his back and like got like a super sick feeling. And then he mentioned that he had he had seen an orb and was like following it. And then right when he said that, it looked like an orb had, like, come out of his back. And you could see it on camera. Like, right where he said that he felt something go into his back and then felt really sick. And then he was, like, fine.
Ew.
Yeah. Aaron did not have a good time here, guys. It was sad.
Poor Aaron.
So Zach and Billy were both, because they had, like, all split up at this point. And Zach and Billy were both in different cells trying to talk to different people. And at the same time, they both heard another cell door open. So Zach, like, runs out and, like, starts looking around, and then he hears, like, a super loud bang that literally scares the complete shit out of him. Like, he says that on camera. He's like, now you're gonna see something that scared the shit out of me. Like, he jumped real bad. And then, this is, like, my favorite thing ever. Okay, so at 3:13 a.m., the camera in the cell block, they're all in, I don't remember exactly. I think it was part of, like, the museum, just, like, memorabilia kind of stuff. And okay. They're just, like, overlooking all of their footage of everything. And the camera that's in the cell block captures, like, this, like, old saloon music type. It was a I didn't like it. It sounded like a piano, and it was creepy. Right. So they go in there and they see one of their like nerve light things like begin to like flash and do all this crazy shit, and they're like, "This has never happened before." And it was right next to this big case that was talking about the prison band and all of this other stuff.
Oh, that's weird.
And so then they're like, "Oh, well, here's this door to the theater room." So they go into the theater room. And they're like, "No, like, there's, like, so much electricity in here. Like, there's definitely stuff in here." So they pull out the thing that has the stick figures. And they point it to the stage. And all of a sudden, three figures appear on the stage. And they literally look like they're playing instruments. Like, one looks like it's strumming a guitar. One looks like it's kind of sitting down and playing drums. Like,
aww.
And then a fourth one kind of comes on and, like, does, like, a little dance and then, like, gets off. And then they're like, "Wave to us, wave to us." And two of them literally, like, put an arm up and, like, wave.
That's so cute. Like, they were performing.
It gets,
oh
my God, it gets better.
We have an audience.
It gets so much better. So, two of them end up leaving. And then, so this one is left. And they're like, "Oh my gosh, you're amazing." And, like, all this stuff. And so he bows.
Aww.
And then Aaron is like, "Show us your dance moves." And he literally sits there and starts, like, tap dance.
That is literally
and then he
so
bows,
cute.
And then he bows again, and then they all just disappear.
It probably felt so good to, like, have an audience after however long.
Well, and I know, and they were just like, "Oh my God, this is the coolest thing ever." And it really was. It was the coolest thing ever.
Aw.
So, creepy place, but I really kind of want to go there to see that.
I want to go talk to the band.
I know.
Play for me, guys.
Seriously. It was so cool.
That's so cute.
So, yeah, that's the territorial prison in Arizona.
It's horrible, but that's adorable.
Yes.
Horrible and adorable.
Things. Horrible and adorable.
Okay, so we're going to make a sharp left turn, and the vibe's going to go totally differently.
Great.
Actually, I did this story because it was suggested to us by our listener, Melissa. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa, for actually talking to us on Facebook unlike anybody else.
Right? I had actually heard of this guy before, but I didn't know very much about him. And when she told me that this guy was disturbing, she freaking meant it.
Oh, great. Can't wait.
So, all right. Anatoly Moskvin was born September 1st. 1966 in, here we go, Nizhny Novgorod. Anyway, it's this town in Russia.
Keeping up with the Russian stories, Amanda. It entertains the fuck out of me.
Oh, God.
Excuse me.
Oh, I'm crying.
Oh, it's fine.
Anyway. So he graduated from Moscow State University with a degree in philology, which is the study of literary texts, oral and written records, the establishment of their authenticity in their original form, and the determination of their meaning. No. And that's what Wikipedia said it meant.
No offense, but that sounds boring as fuck.
Yeah, it does.
But, okay. Good for you.
After graduation, he became very well known in the academic world. He focused on Celtic history and folklore, as well as language and linguistics. He once worked as a lecturer in Celtic studies at the Nizhny Novgorod Linguistic University.
That wasn't as bad. You were more confident that time.
I don't know.
I felt it better that time.
He also worked at the Institute of Foreign Languages, and he himself knew 13 languages.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah.
I know one and, like, couple words of some other ones,
yeah,
maybe.
Like, well, I know, like, one and a half.
Right?
There, we'll go with that.
He wrote several books and papers, and he worked for a while as a journalist. He had a very heavy interest in cemeteries, the occult, death and burial rituals.
Gross.
He was a self-proclaimed necropolist and expert of local cemeteries. He said that his interest in death came from an incident from his childhood. This story is highly disturbing.
Okay.
So the story goes that he and a friend were walking home from school one day when a group of men in black suits stopped him. These men were part of a funeral procession for an 11-year-old girl named Natasha Petrova.
Oh, no.
The men took Anatoly to her casket and forced him to kiss her face.
Why?
A quote specifically from him said, quote, "An adult pushed my face down to the waxy forehead of the girl in an embroidered cap, and there was nothing I could do but kiss her as I was ordered. I kissed her once, and then again."
Why?
End quote. Supposedly, the girl's mother forced a ring onto his finger and then placed one on the girl's dead body. And he said, quote, "My strange marriage with Natasha Petrova was useful," end quote. And he credits it for teaching him to believe in magic and his fascination for the dead.
So your so two parents of two children, one of them being dead, forced them to get married.
Well, the mom of the little girl, like, forced the ring on him.
Why did she force this little boy to marry her dead daughter?
I don't know.
What the fuck?
So, I don't know if I think it's true or not, but his story has literally never changed.
He said he was 11 at this time?
The little girl was, he didn't say. Or at least I didn't see it anywhere.
Good lord.
But, yeah, his story literally never once changed. So I don't know if it was actually true or if he just convinced himself that this thing happened to him or...
Regardless, it's fucked up.
Right?
Whether you thought about that or it actually happened, it's
either way, fucked up. It's upsetting. Yeah. It's upsetting.
Yeah, very.
So, okay. So he was an introvert, obviously.
Yeah.
He had a personal library of over 60,000 books and texts. He kept a collection of dolls, which...
Ew.
Nobody likes dolls.
Why did you do that?
Well, we're going to talk about the dolls later.
But oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So, he never dated anyone or married anyone. He never had any children. He lived with his parents. He never drank, never smoked, never used drugs, and supposedly was a virgin, and honestly, I kind of believe it.
Yeah, I'd be. Well, you collected dolls. Any female that stepped foot into your bedroom, I'm pretty sure, walked right the fuck out.
Well, and he lived with his parents at, like, 45.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you were a 45-year-old virgin.
For her, sure.
Yeah.
In 2005, a fellow academic publisher by the name of Oleg Ryabov asked Anatoly to list and summarize all of the dead that were in over 700 cemeteries in 40 different regions of Nizhny Novgorod.
That place.
Yeah. According to Anatoly, he walked up to 30 kilometers a day, which was like 18 miles or something.
Ew.
He did this every day for 2 years. He inspected 752 cemeteries. He claims that he drank from puddles. He slept in abandoned farmhouses or in the cemeteries themselves. And he says that he once even slept in a coffin that was prepared for a funeral service the following day.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
He was approached by the police multiple times over his travels. They suspected that he was up to no good, like vandalizing or thieving.
You clearly were.
Well, but he even told them, like, "I'm just doing this research for this person that asked me to categorize all these deaths and things like that," whatever. So the police were like, "All right, I mean, sure. I guess.
Why not?"
Yeah. Alexei Yezin, he was the editor of Necrologies, which was a weekly paper that Anatoly wrote for sometimes.
Okay.
He said that Anatoly's work on the cemeteries were unique and priceless, though they remain unpublished today, so only a select few people have ever actually read these documents.
Hmm.
Anatoly wrote as a freelancer for the newspaper with the name of the city.
Okay, that one.
Mm-hmm. Between 2006 and 2010, and at one time he published an article about the histories of those cemeteries. On November 2nd, 2011, he was arrested during an investigation of grave desecrations.
Oh.
The police searched his home following the arrest. They found papers and clutter, like, everywhere. He had maps of all of the cemeteries.
Ew.
There were photos and videos of open graves with the bodies in them.
Ew.
There's police footage showing his doll collection sitting in various places, like, throughout the room and stuff like that. They also found multiple identifying pieces of evidence, such as nameplates that had been removed from the headstones.
Ooh.
Police found the instructions on how to make these dolls that were made from the stolen bodies of 26 children.
He was hold on. No. You're not allowed to just... No. Hold on. So were these, like, Gemma-sized dolls?
I think some of them went up to, like, 14 or 15 years old.
Oh my god!
No, those were the ones that were in the pictures of the grave. The dolls, though, I'm assuming they were small children because he passed them off as dolls.
Holy Christ almighty. Oh my god.
Okay, continue.
He was suspected of having desecrated over 150 graves.
Wow.
He cooperated with the police after being arrested. He said that he had made the dolls over the course of 10 years. He said he would work on them when his parents were away for long periods of time during the year, and that he had no idea what he was up to, or that they had no idea what he was up to.
Wow.
Keep in mind, a lot of people knew about these dolls, and nobody ever assumed that they were, like, people.
Yeah, like, stuffed humans.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
He was given a psychiatric evaluation and was found to have a form of paranoid schizophrenia. In May of 2012, he was dubbed unfit to stand trial and sentenced to coercive medical measures. The prosecution did not appeal that sentence, so it stood.
Okay.
His treatment was extended in 2013, 2014, and 2015.
Good.
In 2014, a spokesperson said, quote, "After 3 years of monitoring him in a psychiatric clinic, it is absolutely clear that Moskvin is not mentally fit for trial. He will therefore be kept in psychiatric treatment at the clinic," end quote.
I mean, yeah, you're fucking insane.
Oh, yeah, dude. In September of 2018, his doctors started a petition for him. They said that he was no longer dangerous and he should be moved to an outpatient care
situation. Okay. Great idea.
Yeah. 5 months later, in February of 2019, they withdrew that petition after another evaluation determined it was far too early for his release.
Oh, good. Good. Good job.
Yeah.
Put him back.
So, why the fuck did he do this, you might be asking?
Yeah, I would love to know. What the fuck?
Well, according to him, he felt an intense sympathy for the deceased children and believed that either by science or black magic, he could bring them back to life. In his studies, he had learned that ancient druids he was a Celtic historian.
Yeah.
The ancient druids used to sleep on the graves to communicate with the dead. He would look through children's obituaries and choose one that, quote, spoke to him. And then he would go sleep on their grave and ask them if they wanted to be brought back to life. He claims that he never dug up a grave without the permission of the child.
Oh, my God.
He says, after 20 years of these practices, he got too old and sleeping on the ground became painful, so he started taking them home with him so he could be more comfortable while trying to communicate with them, and he hoped that it would be easier to hear them since they weren't underground anymore.
Okay, well, you're not getting permission before you dig them up now.
Right.
Fucker. Right. Why? Why? Why are you doing this to these babies?
So how did he have 26 bodies and it didn't ring to high fucking hell and nobody knew?
Yeah, like, how, I want to know how he turned these into dolls. Do we get to know more about
that?
Yes. Okay, thank you. Because I need to know. I don't want to know, but I need to know.
Directly from Wikipedia.
Ew.
This is all quoted. After exhuming the corpses, Moskvin researched mummification theories and techniques in an attempt to preserve the bodies. He dried the corpses using a combination of salt and baking soda, and then cached the bodies in secure dry places in and around the cemeteries. Once the bodies had dried, he would carry them from his to his home, where he used various methods to make, quote, dolls, in an attempt to give the children functional bodies to be used when he eventually discovered a way to bring them back to life, feeling that their physical remains were too decayed and too ugly for them to feel comfortable or happy in them. Unable to prevent the bodies from withering and shrinking as they dried, he would wrap the limbs in strips of cloth and then stuff the body cavities with rags and padding to provide fullness, sometimes adding wax masks, decorations, and nail polish over the faces before dressing them in brightly colored children's clothing and wigs. These details made the bodies appear to be large homemade dolls, which prevented their discovery. It was unclear if each doll contained a full set of human remains.
Oh.
But wait, I have pictures.
I don't want to see.
So this is him.
Okay, not gonna lie to you.
He's fairly attractive, honestly. Yeah. This is his, like, most creepiest, most infamous doll. There's another one. But this is that little girl. Her parents had posted this picture when her body was found.
Oh my god, you guys. So did he give them, like, glass eyes? Did it say that?
I saw something somewhere that said some of them were lucky enough to get eyes.
Well, this one was clearly his favorite because she had some.
Mm-hmm. You can tell that he was trying to keep her looking as close to her life self as possible.
Because she does. It's very creepy. Oh my Lanta, what the actual fuck?
Like the sweet little baby angel.
That is this. What is wrong? And this all stemmed from.
Supposedly, this lady. Some crazy lady making him marry her dead daughter.
And so now you wanted to preserve dead children.
In hopes that he could bring them back to life at some point.
What? Yeah, like, what was your plan here to bring them back to life? That's like. What?
He was paranoid schizophrenic, dude.
Okay, I mean, I know. I'm trying to make sense out of something that can't be. But. Wow, that was not at all what I thought this was going to be about.
Yeah.
Holy
I know.
Fuck.
Like, I knew about the doll thing, but, like, reading all of his back history and, like, how he, like, was seriously obsessed with cemeteries, like, all this other shit, I'm like, well, I guess somebody should have seen something coming at some point.
I mean, but you would have thought, but holy, wowza. Yeah, talk about left turn.
Yeah.
We did a U-turn.
Yeah.
Let's go back to my band.
Yeah, they were cute.
They were adorable. And the little dancer. Holy moly, I'm going to have nightmares about that doll.
I know.
Like, that brings creepy doll to a whole different,
I know,
category of creepy fucking doll.
I know.
Oh my god, my skin is crawling. Okay, well, I'm going to go try to sleep now.
Yeah.
Thanks you're for welcome. That. I'm going to think about my happy band ghost. Ghost band. Yeah, that's what I'm going to think about.
Yep. And you guys can think about going and looking at all of our videos on Patreon.
Yes, you can. You know you want to. They're awesome. Also, go do the social meds. Talk to us. Give us suggestions. What do you want from us for Halloween? We'll give it to you.
We'll make a party out of it.
Hell yeah, dude. We'll throw a Halloween freaking party. Let's do it. But give us something to celebrate, guys. Give us something to work off of, please.
Thank you for those of you that have been.
Yes, seriously. The people that have been interacting more and commenting and doing everything, we appreciate you so much. And that's why we like and comment everything like 1,000 times and just
Don't judge us. We have no lives.
We don't.
You guys are, you're what we live for. That and our children. You know, it's fine. Don't leave the house at gmail.com. 31 episodes in. Maybe one day I'll learn our email.
Right.
Don't leave the house podcast.com. Don't leave the house on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. All the stuff. We love you guys. Happy October. Stay safe. Don't forget. Don't leave the house.
Don't leave the house!